Greetings, Mr. and Mrs. Middle America and all the ships at sea. This is Coast to Coast AM with Ian Punnett in for George Norrie. And to the hostile invading alien armies hovering silently behind their cloaking devices just outside of Earth's atmosphere, remember, eat the Canadians first. And if you didn't hear the story, there's evidence that they're finally answering the dinner bell. We'll get to that coming up in a few minutes. Thank you to Marty, who had tweeted out this old photo of me from, 13 years ago on Twitter. My handle there is at Deacon Punnett. And Marty, I still have those glasses. I still have that shirt. And I still have that jacket, that corduroy jacket. And I still have that hair. I think that's probably the good news out of all of it. Before we get to our guests, and we have so much to get to this weekend, I'm very excited about the return of my friend David Dismulchin. In the first hour on Saturday night, many of you know him as Polka Dot Man from Suicide Squad, which, although didn't, outperform at the box office, as they say, it was highly critically acclaimed, and it's a fun movie. It's really a good time. And David is terrific in it as Polka Dot Man, and he's going to join us in the first hour. Then we'll talk tomorrow night about some real-life American heroes, American Phoenix, heroes of the Pentagon on 9/11. And as long as we're talking about heroes, I will plug that we'll get to this hour an exciting conversation about a book that's not new, but a guy who is always putting out books. T. Krulos has a new book out, which we'll talk about, too. But he, going back to 2013, he wrote this great book about tracking the homemade DIY neighborhood superheroes. And we want to get an update from him about the people that are the heroes of the night, those who don a persona and fight crime in their neighborhoods. I will ask about both the old book and how he has been in touch with some of those people. And then he's well known to be on the Monsters Trail as well. He, has been out there following behind the people who are following Bigfoot and UFOs and other fun things. So T. Krulos coming up as our main guest tonight. And Tim Banal will run through some stories that were big for this week. I wanted to take one second, if I could, to address a unique experience for me in 14 years. I think I've done Coast now coming up on, it's either 21 or 22. We can't ever, there's no actual record, but somewhere in the area of 21 or 22 years. But it has been 14 years since I've done Coast to Coast without my rescue dog, Jack, who many of you might know. I had kind of a difficult time with last spring when he had an apparent stroke, and he had declined over the course of the summer. Unfortunately, we had to put him down recently. He was always a companion for me while I'm doing Coast. In fact, he was sort of like part co-host, part foot warmer, part colicky baby, especially on nights of thunderstorms and stuff. And it's going to be kind of weird. It's the first time I've done Coast without Jack at my feet. And thank you for all the kind words. People who follow me on Twitter at Deacon Punnett were sweet enough to like a photo I posted of Jack. In fact, he got somewhere over 600 likes for that photo. I don't think I'd do that well if I died. I don't think I'd get 600. Well, maybe I would, because there'd be 600 people that would like the fact that I'm dead. So that's always a possibility. But there were so many wonderful comments, and I appreciate you all getting me through that. I think he'll be my last dog, which is kind of an odd thought, unless God gifts me with another that I can't possibly foresee. I think I'm at that stage in my life where I don't think I could ever go through that kind of separation again. But we loved him till the very end and rubbed his head and reminded him what a good boy he was until he wasn't. And I will forever miss him. And if you have been through that experience too, as I heard from so many people on Twitter on that, I'm so sorry for what you've been through too. It's a tough experience to lose one of our four-legged friends, especially when we get to know their personality so well and they've been around for so long that it does feel much more like losing a family member. Trite as it may seem, it's true. But he could also be a bit of a monster. And I have wonderful photos, and occasionally I'll be tweeting out the damage he could do if he was in the mood, which will forever make me smile when I reflect on him. So I will share a story about monsters in the news. And the other big stories for this week, Tim Banal is our editor-in-chief, and we'll get to that next, coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Tim Banal is our chief of content on the website for coasttocoastam.com and always looks to see what stories get the biggest hits and the most attention during the week. And Tim, it's always a pleasure. Been a while since we've chatted.
Yeah, it sure has. Sorry about Jackie.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. I think he actually made Coast to Coast a couple of times over the years. I think I posted a photo or two. Of course, he was the subject of my second children's book, Jackula the Vampire Dog. And he was my muse in so many ways. I had no idea. I even sent you a text, so I don't know exactly what the stories are tonight. What were the big stories for this week at coasttocoastam.com?
Oh, okay. Must have got lost in the ether.
That's all right.
Sent them along to you. I'm doing a little Friday the 13th kind of theme here.
Oh, cool.
Spooky, little sort of horror-y kind of thing. The first one's a pretty lighthearted one. Folks can check it out in the number 3 spot in the carousel. Police in Pakistan made an arrest of a mischievous individual who was caught wearing a monster mask and roaming the streets, frightening people. And as I said, it's sort of a cut and dry kind of story. If you like wacky, you can head on over to the Coast website in the number 3 spot and check out, go into the article. You can see the video of this guy. It looks like a Michael Myers mask.
And yeah, really.
Behind bars in Peshawar, Pakistan, and refusing to take the mask off, probably because he's so embarrassed that they're filming him.
Or the mask is better looking than he is, which is another reason, you know, that it might be an upgrade that he's wearing the mask.
There you go. Now, the next story, this one's a really weird one by virtue of how it came about. So the Jose Manuel Rios Morales, who happens to be the mayor of the Colombian city of Armenia, he took to social media last week with a video, and you can watch it in the number 2 spot at the Coast to Coast AM carousel. And it seems like a normal video. I don't speak Spanish, so I don't really know what he's saying. I kind of read a translation later. But when you watch the video, it seems like very official looking, like he's updating on infrastructure or something like that. Right. And then all of a sudden it cuts to this ghost video. And what it is a security guard walking through a city building, and he gets thrown into a wall by an unseen force, and then thrown to the ground, and he's terrified, and the other security guards come running over to help him out. And the mayor, he shares this on social media and tells the constituents that this happened. He says, I'm sharing with you this phantasm attack that occurred in one of our government office buildings, and I want to assure you all that the power of faith is unbeatable, and I've enlisted a bishop and several other religious figures in the city to come and bless every corner of this workspace. So what are the weirder political messages I've seen in a while?
Here's my question is, so when is the next election? What exactly are the people going back to the voting booths? Because that sounds suspiciously like a little public posturing. But okay, let's go with that. But and then what's our third story?
All right, now the third story. This is one of those stories, Ian, where I think to myself, boy, do I love my job. Because this is a story, a kind of another cut and dry story. Folks, you have to see this video. It's in the number one spot in the carousel. I wasn't sure what to call this phenomenon, so I ultimately settled on simply ghost pants. And what this is a video, a very mysterious video. We're not sure where it came from. It popped up online. Looks like it was filmed somewhere outside the United States. And it's a video of a young child. They're playing in the middle of a desolate road at night with a rabbit. And just in the background, you see a pair of pants run down the road, run down the sidewalk. Just a pair of pants. There's no upper body to this individual. You can see behind where the torso would be. So I don't understand it myself. It's just a pair of pants running down the road. Some people have said maybe it's, and jokingly say, oh, maybe it's the Invisible Man, and he only got half dressed. I don't know. I have no explanation for the ghost pants, but it was something I've never seen before in my life. It's really wild.
Well, it could be that actually isn't a ghost, but somebody else up the street had the pants scared off of them,
Ian, the pants took. How did I not think of that joke when I wrote the article? The
pants took off all entirely on their own after scaring the pants off the guy. My favorite story this week was the story about the UFO sightings over Canada. And that this is on the increase, more and more sightings, and I'd like to take some credit for that. So, yeah, I'd like to say I believe that I've been getting out, letting the hostile invading alien armies know about those tasty Canadians. All I want to know is I want the video of them, and I want to find out whether any of those occupants in any of those crafts are wearing bibs. That's what I want to know. And then I'll know my work here is done. All right, well, terrific, Tim. Always a pleasure. Have a great night. I think you're going to enjoy the fun show tonight. So T. Krulos joins us now live on Coast to Coast AM from Milwaukee. Let me ask you, what percentage of your average week, what percentage is spent giving like ghost tours and paranormal tours around Milwaukee? What percentage of your week is spent writing books, and what percentage of your week is spent bartending?
Hey, Ian. Well, first of all, it's great to be here, especially on Friday the 13th.
Exactly.
And it seems like I'm just going 100% of the time. So I spend most of my week working on writing projects.
Oh, good.
I do some ghost tours for American Ghost Walks here Friday and Saturday nights. I'm not bartending currently, but that is something that I've done in the past.
It was in your bio, and I thought, okay, well, you know.
Always be a bartender. So.
There's no shame in being a hardworking man. And your books are many. I think we're going to have a chance to talk about a lot of them tonight. I don't know if in the time that we have we can get to all of them, but I do want to go back over the superhero thing because I find that subject very interesting, and it's always fun to get an update on a book like that, because I'm sure that both you track the story and the people track you telling that story. But let's talk about your most recent book first, and that's from last year, the American Madness book, The Story of the Phantom Patriot and How Conspiracy Theories Hijacked American Consciousness. Just tell me real quickly what that's about.
Yeah, so you mentioned the real-life superhero movement. I was working on my first book, and I was contacted by a man named Richard McCaslin. And he had told me that he had adopted his own superhero persona, the Phantom Patriot, and that the thing he was most well-known for, I guess, was that in 2002, he dressed up in this costume, and he raided a place called the Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, we've talked about Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it's been a topic on Coast to Coast. So it's this secret society retreat in Northern California. And, you know, he had some information that he thought that there was actually people being imprisoned inside of the Bohemian Grove. So he was wearing this costume. He had a lot of weapons with him. He snuck in there at night, and he had a confrontation with police eventually and actually went to prison for 6.5 years. And he contacted me because he discovered I was working on my first book, Heroes in the Night, and, you know, wanted to share his story with me. So what ended up happening was I interviewed him pretty much for the next 8 years. I was in contact with him and really explored his life and some of the theories that he believed in. And that eventually became American Madness, which came out last year from Feral House.
Well, congratulations on that. And then Monster Hunters on the Trail with Ghost Hunters, Bigfooters, Ufologists, and other paranormal investigators. That takes us back 5 or 6 years.
Yep, 2015.
And this dovetails into kind of your, when you were doing like ghost tours and paranormal tours?
It was such a great experience because I spent a couple years hanging out a lot with a local group called the Paranormal Investigators of Milwaukee.
Okay.
We do ghost investigations, but I also spent time hanging out with Bigfoot hunters, going to UFO conventions, stuff like that. So it was a really great learning experience. I was just very curious about people who are devoted to studying those subjects.
You know, one of my favorite books about werewolves of sorts, the man dog stories, comes out of Wisconsin, and the frequent sightings of that. It was a guest I had on here, I don't know, 20 some odd years ago on Coast to Coast, but really enjoyed that, and thought that she did really nice work, and that the sightings were fairly substantiated by people who were willing to go on the record, you know, even at the risk of losing part of their credibility in their occupations.
Yeah, you're talking about Linda S. Godfrey.
Exactly.
She wrote the story of the Beast of Bray Road.
Right.
She's great. I actually have a chapter in Monster Hunters that's titled The Accidental Werewolf Chronicler.
Oh, interesting.
And it's all about her and how she discovered that story and her research into it.
I think I'm blurbed on the back of one of those editions of that book. Now that I think about it, I have to go.
Yeah,
I'd have to go look.
She went on to write several books, not just about the Beast of Bray Road or other dogman sightings, but she's written books about other cryptozoology cases and stuff like that too.
She was great. If you ever speak to her, tell her I said hi. Heroes of the Night. Now, this is so in both fictional, you know, in movies that are for entertainment purposes, but also in, you know, I guess you could say comedies or even in serious drama. This notion of people who will don the mask and sort of carve out a square and protect their turf. This is a real thing. It gets treatment in entertainment media, but it does happen. And I've spoken with many people who are anonymous. They prefer to remain anonymous for obvious reasons. But you kind of embedded yourself in this community, and I will be getting to know them a little bit more, and I'm going to ask for an update. But give me the thumbnail for everybody on Heroes in the Night. Were you on with George on that back 10 years ago or some time ago?
I did speak to George about it, yeah.
Yeah. So what's the just real quickly explain what that movement was, because you were kind of early on the crest of that wave.
Yes, absolutely. So that story for me actually goes all the way back to 2009. I had read this really short newspaper blurb that said there's this new subculture of people and they adopt their own superhero personas And some of them actually go out and try to fight crime and stuff like that. And I thought about that all day, and I was like, what does that mean? I mean, I never heard of this. So curiosity got the better of me, and I Googled Milwaukee, which is where I live, and Real Life Superhero, which was the name of this movement, and I met a guy here named The Watchman. I actually, when I Googled, I found his MySpace page. MySpace was still a thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had
that tells you how far back that was. Well, hang on a second. We'll pick that up. Your encounter with The Watchman, and then how that led to finding other people in this movement as well. T. Krulos is our guest, and we'll keep exploring heroes in the night inside the real life superhero movement. And I think you're going to like the bumpers. I think it's like Bumper Palooza tonight on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. So I want to get to open lines too coming up after our time with T. Krulos. So keep track of anything you want to be talking about tonight. There's so many things we could be hitting on that we won't. Until then, but if you want to later on tonight, throw in what you would be if you were a superhero, not what your superpower would be, maybe, but like, you know, if you were fantasizing about that, if you could really do it, what would you do? I've been doing Krav Maga. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's the Israeli self-defense. It's kind of a martial art, I guess. And it's really interesting. I do it a couple of nights a week, and I'm enjoying learning that. Not because I'm ever going to, you know, put on a cape, but if I did, I'd be using a lot of what I'm learning there. And that can be part of what you want to get to later on Coast to Coast. Coming up tomorrow night, don't miss American Phoenix. We'll be talking about real life heroes of the Pentagon on 9/11. That's, you know, obviously not quite a little less than a month between now and the celebration of the heroes of 9/11. And there's some untold stories that are in this book that you're going to want to hear about coming up tomorrow night on Coast. While we, you know, obviously solemnly recognize those we lost, we can learn more about the people that helped to minimize that loss of life, and that'll be tomorrow night. And the first hour, Polka Dot Man himself, David Dismalchin, will join us on Coast to Coast. T. Krulos is the author of a book, which not quite 10 years old, but we're talking about it tonight, getting an update on Heroes of the Night. And also, he's got other new books out you can link up to all of what he does at coasttocoastam.com. And T, you were just starting to tell me about how you had read this story and you investigated and you found out that in Milwaukee there was a guy who was calling himself Watchman, and he was patrolling the streets of Milwaukee as a crime fighter, and that's what started you down this road. What was he dressed like? What was his persona really about? Did he kind of just steal that from the graphic novel?
No, not quite. And this is a night that I'll never forget, I'm sure. I contacted him online, and he suggested that we meet up at a city park near my house. So I was at this park at night walking around, and I saw this very normal-looking car pull up, and this guy got out, and he was wearing a red rubber cowl, and he had red leather gloves and a shirt with his logo on it, and a trench coat, and some combat boots. And it just was really a reality-bending moment where I was like, wow, this is really happening. And he introduced himself, and we walked around the neighborhood for a couple of hours. And, you know, I didn't know anything about him. I was like, this guy could be completely insane. This might be a hoax. And
yeah, really.
Standing here all night and no one's going to show up. But he was very interesting and certainly somewhat quirky, but I really got a lot of what he was saying about wanting to try to make the world a better place. So I had this great conversation with him, and then I think the really important thing was he sort of put in a good word about me to the rest of the real-life superhero movement or subculture. And I started to make some connections, and soon I was talking to people like Razorhawk and Civitron and Zeta Man. And I didn't have a book deal, or, you know, I didn't even really know how one goes about writing a book, but I knew I had a good story. So every few months, I would take a little time off, and I would go to New York City or Seattle or San Diego and meet the real-life superheroes there and go out on patrol with them sometimes and start to, you know, find out what this was all about.
Okay. So I love the fact that you went to different cities, because that gave you kind of an A-B comparison of, like, who had better superheroes, real-life superheroes,
yeah.
Right? So which city had the best real-life superheroes?
You know, I have some hometown pride. I really like the guys I met from Milwaukee. Watchmen started to develop this team of new real-life superheroes here. And because I live here, I got to hang out with them quite a bit. So I think I have some bias there, but definitely the most action-packed city I discovered was Seattle.
Okay.
There's a real-life superhero there named Phoenix Jones, and he led a team called the Rain City Superhero Movement. So I actually went out there to go on patrol with him, and I had one of the most frightening nights of my life, which was we saw a group of people fighting in the middle of the streets, and Phoenix Jones ran into the middle of them, and he pepper sprayed everyone. And then there was this scene of just total chaos. People were running around screaming. Someone was half blind with pepper spray and tried to drive their car away, and they sort of hit someone on their side.
Ugh.
And
not a person, but it hit another car.
So no, hit a person in their arm as they were.
Oh no!
So not a bad injury. But,
ouch!
These guys, it turned out, were Russians that were fighting, and they ran towards us, and Phoenix Jones pepper sprayed them again, and they were pretty angry about that. I ended up
yeah.
punched in the face that night.
Ow.
By an angry pepper spray.
Russian.
they tried to run us over with an SUV at one point, and I was very frightened and thought that someone might die that evening.
So, who were the Russians fighting at the time? Were they just fighting each other?
Each other. They just left the bar, so I think, you know, they were probably bumping chests, and but they were throwing each other around, and there was a guy kicking another guy in the rib. So it was a pretty serious fight.
Yeah, but I mean, it's between, like I'm just going to, and this wouldn't be my superhero, Devil's Advocate, but that's kind of an interesting superhero name. But if I were to play Devil's Advocate, I would say, what was gained by pepper spraying a bunch of mad Russians who then ended up maybe causing more problem and more pain than they would have had they just been allowed to finish out their fight, you know, on their own devices?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the problem with real-life superheroics is it's not like the comic books at all. It's I think he had good intentions, that he maybe wanted to prevent these guys from seriously harming each other, but it ended up that the situation became a lot worse than it
yeah.
was.
Because, and that's not even like a superhero weapon, right? I mean, that's a very unsuperhero weapon. Pepper spray, like anybody, like my mom has pepper spray. So what?
We started the evening off, by the way. He had a duffel bag that was filled with weapons. He had, you know, this kind of pepper spray that looked like it was a mini fire extinguisher. It was a very big bottle of pepper spray. And he had some zip ties in case he needed to put someone under citizen's arrest. And like a collapsible baton and stuff like that.
Well, that's kind of a thin line between super, you know, hero and super villain at that point. If he's going around pepper spraying people who are coming out, you know, who bumping chests, whatever, they weren't attacking anybody innocent. I mean, and if that's his weapon of choice, you know, he shouldn't it be like Dr. Pepper or something? Shouldn't that be like his moniker? But I mean, what was, as you looked at it and you saw him and you think, well, that's great, but what did the local police think of that? Didn't he commit a crime?
Well, yeah, they arrested him that night.
Oh, okay, they did. Okay, because that's assault.
Yeah. Yes, I saw the police sirens, and I, you know, never thought I would be glad to see police sirens. But
oh, interesting.
They intervened, and they were familiar with him, and they were not happy to see him. And yeah, he went to jail that night.
Okay, so that he's in Seattle, and he led a group of people there. He was sort of was he kind of the alpha of that particular real life superhero group?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay. Who else was in that pod? Do you remember?
Out that night with us was Ghost. For a while, his significant other, Purple Rain, was part of the group.
Okay.
And there's some other members, Buster Jones, I remember. And there was a few others. There was sort of a split. Some of his crew stopped working with him and started their own team in Seattle.
Okay.
So for a while, there was a couple, I wouldn't say they're rival teams, but they were separate teams.
I would imagine that somewhere between when they were first, you know, cutting up fabric and sewing things together and when they put their head on the pillow that night, they were imagining that at the end of a night's service, they would end up getting like keys to the city and they would be patted on the back by the mayor or something. But have any of them actually stopped any real life crime from happening that then they were applauded for?
I believe that happened in San Diego. There were some superheroes there that were doing more like a costume neighborhood watch. I would say it's a little bit tamer version. And they actually like spoke to the mayor and stuff like that. Phoenix Jones, I should know. I mean, he has done some good things in Seattle in the past. He has stopped like some car break-ins,
which
were on video. He's done some charity events, which is
good.
Great, you know, I think that's a way that being a real life superhero can be effective. If you want to do that, like do a cool charity event that's superhero themed or something like that, because those usually work out a lot better than trying to mitigate a street fight or to confront a drug dealer.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. And I mean, in their pursuit of justice, I would imagine a lot of it is really about the camaraderie of it, right? Is driving around and, you know, being together and talking about life and their day jobs. And that's a good, it's kind of a fun activity, maybe a little bit like the next level kind of, you know, role playing that you would see at a Comic-Con or something. What are some of their day jobs, by the way?
Oh, it's a full range. That's one thing I found very fascinating about this subculture or movement. It really does range quite a bit from economic backgrounds to race and religious and political views. So, I mean, the last few years have been very divisive, of course, but a lot of them put aside their differences and work together on stuff because, like you say, they really love the camaraderie. They still do a couple of annual events that are called Hope, and one usually takes place in San Diego and one takes place in Chicago. And they all get together and they travel from all over the country and they hand out supplies to homeless people and do charity events. And then they just, they hang out and they talk shop and talk about the superhero life. So it is a social thing, and you're right. It is very similar to like cosplaying at comic conventions, but it has a more, I would say, humanitarian angle to it.
It's aspirational.
Yes.
Right? I mean, they're kind of hoping that something would happen, but you almost kind of have to have, you know, if breakable is any way to measure this, in order for you to ever be a successful superhero, you have to have an equal level supervillain that you're fighting against, right? So is there a supervillain movement out there too that they're chasing around at night in their old, you know, family trucksters around town?
Well, actually there is. It's what I call a subculture or an anti-movement, and it's people that call themselves real life supervillains. They don't actually do crimes or villainous activities. But most of them are pretty much costumed internet trolls.
Okay.
So they will make videos in which they diss the real life superheroes and make fun of them, or, you know, they'll have a blog where they talk about how much superheroes suck and stuff like that.
They'll have a bake sale. They'll have doesn't sound very exactly. Super villainous. They have a blog. Okay. Again, my mother has a blog and pepper spray. So I'm just
be a real life supervillain.
I guess so. Well, she hasn't made up her mind which one. So, but that's interesting. So, what are some of the names of the supervillains that are up against the real life superheroes?
Oh, one of my favorites was Lord Malignus. And he would have these short YouTube videos, and he would start every video the same way. He would say, "I am Lord Malignus, and you may crouch before me." And then he would go into some, you know, issue that he had with a particular real-life superhero. Some of the other ones that I talked to and interviewed for the book, Agent Beryllium, Melvado, I'm trying to think who else. The Golden Dawn was a cool guy.
How many of these people live in? This is going to sound really mean. So, I really kind of am curious. How many of these people live in their mom's basements? Well, and I say that in the sense of like, how could you be married, you know, and then like go out, honey, what time are you going to be back? Oh, I'm going to be patrolling the streets for 5 hours. I should be back, but.
Well, there are some that are definitely like that. There's kind of this stereotype that, oh, these guys must live in mom and dad's basements, and they're nerdy white guys.
Yeah.
And some of them fit that for sure. But, you know, I was very surprised. I met some that do not fit that stereotype at all.
Really?
And, yeah, they're not necessarily even huge comic book geeks, all of them. They're just attracted to this sort of adrenaline-filled idea. So, you know, like one person I met was Misfit, who is a Puerto Rican bodybuilder.
Okay, she wins.
She's tough.
Yeah.
And, she mostly does charity events, but I was just really glad to see that there was more to it than you would think at first.
Yeah. No, I like that. No, trust me, I think that's kind of cool, and that's a cool name. And I'm glad to see that it's fun and it's not taken too seriously, but I almost kind of fear that sometimes it's just taken too seriously and that it starts to fill some sort of void in a life which could be spent in a more productive way.
Well, I mean, I think that's very much the case of Richard McCaslin, who I met while working on Heroes in the Night wrote about more in American Madness.
Let's stop right there. Let's pick that up. So just hang on to that thought right there, because that's just where we'll pick it up, is taking it too seriously, so seriously, as T. Krolos mentioned earlier, meant that this guy ended up going to prison for 6 years and change. And we're still a half hour away from taking your calls, and then we'll do open lines about an hour from now. But don't miss it. Wonderful books. Link up to T. Krulos at coasttocoastam.com, and we'll talk more about the heroes of the night and whether or not you could be one of them next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.